Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 84. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Colin Mayer.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the first episode from the new TWiT Studios. Scott, what do you think? You're virtually here.
Yeah, you're inside. I feel like a I'm almost next to you, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks for wearing
next
the fez,
to you
by
is the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like that? I'm celebrating. I figure if you come be on the show in the first week of shows from the new place, you got to have the hat.
Got to wear a fez. It's the way we do things. Yeah. Joining us today, you heard him introduce himself because he's one of the TWiT studio crew here. Colin Weir, our studio engineer here at TWiT.tv.
Hello.
Like you didn't have enough to do. We put you on Forecast.
Right,
today.
Exactly. You know, I've done everything else in the last 2 weeks, so I figured let's do a show too.
Well, thanks for being on. Also joining us, somebody I have had the pleasure of meeting at PAB, Podcasters Across Borders Conference up in Ottawa, Mike Vardy, writer, comedian, speaker, humorist, and productivity pundit. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Now, I like the eventual nature of the way things went today.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to fit inside our television.
Yeah, I'm compact.
That's good. That's one of your best qualities. Let's start off with a prediction from one of our listeners, Tom. Not me, but somebody else writes in and says, hello, Tom and Scott. I was just listening to podcast number 82, where you were talking about algorithms that generate books or movie scripts. That technology could also be used for games. Imagine an MMO where your personal story is customized for you. This algorithm could also track who you play with and have your friends' personal stories intertwined with your own. I imagine that your story could also be generated on the fly. If, for example, a character dies in your game, when the original story assumes they lived, a new storyline could be made to reflect this. RPGs would be like Mass Effect on steroids. What do you think, Scott?
I think that this is actually the way things are going. I think that give it a decade maybe, and we start to see this sort of thing emerge. We start to see emergent gameplay come from the players themselves, and the idea that the stories could come from the players themselves is a really powerful idea. Like, you could go a long ways trying to sort of build a game out of that and make a game even, I guess, more interesting in the long run, a game that has no ending, really, because you're making up the story as you go. And we do that now, but it's kind of artificial. So I think that this is not only a strong possibility, but actually I think they're laying the groundwork to make this happen now.
Mike, would it freak you out to have a multiplayer game like that tailored to your real life?
I don't know if I could handle it as a game. I got two young kids, and that's game enough.
You're thinking of it being like The Sims, where you'd just be running around doing all the same things you did earlier that day.
Yeah, exactly.
I just started playing a game called, and my brain just went dead because I'm hearing myself twice. I apologize. Bastion is the game on the 360. And what I like about this game, it's a downloadable title, is that it's really just a hack and slash. It's you running around with a sword. It's you getting new weapons. It's you killing stuff. And it's you exploring. And on that alone, it's an okay game. There's nothing super special about the way it plays. But what's really spectacular about it is the entire time your life as a character is being narrated by an incredible voice actor, and I don't know his name, but every once in a while he'll say, the kid picked up the sword and looked at it with both eyes and couldn't believe what he was seeing, this kind of stuff. The entire game plays out with your experience being narrated, and that's a shocking improvement to an already sort of played out genre. And I think that we'll see a whole bunch more of that coming. And really, that's, to me, the tip of the iceberg for this idea. I think our reader is right on it with this idea.
Colin, are you worried that your MMO would just be you troubleshooting the studio all day?
That's my worst nightmare. But actually, that's what I was thinking is games are kind of to escape. So I don't know if I would want to be playing a game that is mimicking my life. Because I just went through my life. Now I go home and I want to sit down in front of my Xbox and play something different. I want to be out shooting people or building a city, something other than, you know, running down to the basement to turn the stream off.
But what if it was just, it just had your friends in there so that, you know, you've got some reality, but it's not all of reality. Would that make a difference to either one of you guys? Mike, what about you?
No, because I think the idea in a game is, yeah, the whole escape mechanism. Like, I don't want to be Mike Vardy. I want to be, like, you know, Super Mike, or, you know, in the movies, that game, The Movies, where, you know, where you're able to actually, you know, be an actor or writer or producer. I don't want to be in the game setting, you know, when I should be socializing with my friends in real life.
Gotcha. Well, you can send us your predictions, folks. Let us know what you think of this idea of Tom's. Keep the conversation going or send us an entirely new prediction. Forecastpodcast@gmail.com. That's Forcast podcast@gmail.com. Or you can post them up at our blog, forecastpodcast.com. Let's move into the short-term predictions. And Colin, we'll start with you. Things we think will happen sooner than later, maybe in the next few years. What do you got for
us? All right, here's what I've been thinking about. Is we just went through the whole thing with this end of NASA, you know, the end of the space shuttle program. And this is going to open up a huge opportunity for private companies like SpaceX and Virgin Galactic. And I think within the next 10 to 20 years, we'll really see a revolution in getting from point A to point B a lot quicker. The cross-country flight, I think, will be revolutionized once we've mastered the ability to send a large group of people up into orbit and then bring them back down, rather than just up to, you know, 30,000, 40,000 feet.
A lot of people thought that was going to happen with the rocketry programs in the 50s. They imagined these rockets carrying us from one part of the country to another, and then sort of happened with jet engines. But then we had things like the Concorde that we've actually gone backwards.
Right. You know, in the past, you know, 40, 50 years, once we kind of hit jet travel as it is now, we kind of plateaued. And I think now that we've suddenly got private companies looking to move into space exploration, that gives a lot of opportunity to finally start revolutionizing moving people quicker from point A to point B again.
Effect.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I have this straight, Colin, you're saying if the emerging industry of very rich people throwing a lot of money into space travel, you think that some of that research will maybe eventually lead to space travel for common people, but more likely we're going to see that turned into technology we use every day, a commute to work, a trip across the country. Is that in essence what you're talking about?
Not necessarily a trip to work, but something like a cross-country flight where, you know, what takes 5 hours now at 30,000 feet, if you can go up into a crazy arc, up into orbit, and then come back down, you might be able to cut that time, you know, down to an hour or two to get from New York to California versus the 5, 6, 7 hours it takes to do that now.
Mike, wow. If you want to get from Vancouver over to the other side of the continent, would you like a much faster method?
Well, it sounds like a catapult almost.
would you travel by catapult? That is the question, sir.
Well, I've got a moat separating Victoria and Vancouver, so it'd be an easy way to do it. Just the cost, though. I mean, the whole Virgin Galactic flights seem expensive. There's the cruise ships that are hugely expensive, that almost like floating islands now. I mean, while I think it could happen, I just wonder how it would be cost prohibitive, right?
I think the question isn't so much what the cost will be. It will be when that cost will actually come down, because anything like that is going to be expensive to start, and it needs adoption and, you know, people to enter the industry to kind of start knocking those costs down and find solutions to what makes those costs high.
Yeah, the idea is that we come up with new fuels, new engines, new ways of getting there. It just sort of trickles down from there. All right, let's move over to you, Mike. Your short-term prediction, something you think will happen maybe in the next few years. No definite time frame, but sooner rather than later. What do you got for us?
Well, as a productivity pundit guy, I know a lot of people are using digital technology to stay productive and to get on task. And I think over the next few years, as the youth get into the workforce more and more, they're using their phones, their mobile devices, all that stuff to stay on task. And I think we're going to see a level of hyper-productivity burnout, where people are so into the digital technology that they're not able to kind of parse through all that. and we're going to have a bit of a meltdown where things aren't going to be done as quickly or as effectively or efficiently. Until they start to listen to some of the older set, you know, who are using paper. And I think we're going to see a bit of a renaissance to paper where the successful people, people who are going to prosper when it comes to doing stuff, are going to use sort of a hybrid. They'll write down things that they need to do on paper in front of them, but they'll keep everything digitally so they can kind of not lose track. So I think we're going to see a good meshing of those two technologies, analog and digital, when it comes to task management.
I like this quite a bit, and this reminds me of an experience I had the other morning. I'd gotten up early, thought, okay, this is going to be a morning where I can kind of plan August out, figure out what's going on, what do I have to get done, what do I have commitments for. And I found myself a little flustered going, oh, my gosh, I have all these ways I could do it. I could pull up my iPad and do it on that. I could use my phone. I could get into the studio and use the computer. I could use my notebook upstairs. And I'm thinking about all these digital ways that I could plan stuff. And then I'm thinking, well, I could use Things because I already kind of have that. Or I could mess around with my Google Docs and just make a doc for what I need to do. Or maybe Evernote is the thing to use today or whatever. And I found myself not getting anything done. I didn't get anywhere further down the road with my plan at all. And ended up pulling out a notebook and a pen and just writing stuff down. And it was oddly satisfying and kind of refreshing to pull that stuff out and use that again. It's been a very long time for me. So you're probably on it. Like, this feels like even shorter term. It's, for me, I think this is one of the shortest term predictions we've ever had, because I feel like I need to do this more. I need to push away all the multiple ways, you know, the digital world wants me to function and just get back to the way it worked for me when I was a junior in high school.
Colin, how do you organize yourself?
I can actually kind of agree that we might see this soon, because I know so many people who, you know, they regularly tweet things like, oh, I came back to work after my vacation and I had 700,000 emails to go through. And when you get that information, you cannot process that with any sort of ease. Like, where do you even start going through a pile of 700 emails? And I think we're going to start, if not very soon, within the next year or two, start seeing people who, you know, start pushing back, saying, don't email me if it's not important, you know, come talk to me in person, write it down, stick it on my desk. And I think we're going to get away from, you know, this digital overload of just dumping everything into your inbox that you need done.
And don't you guys think that there'll be an increase in tools and filters for the existing technology we have? An example maybe is filters in Gmail, where you know certain inquiries or certain keywords are things that you're going to want to either hit later or not hit at all, or send autoresponders to or something. And it seems like more and more Google is putting in these filters to let us kind of get rid of some of the noise. Do you see a future soon when these companies focus less on features and more on ways of keeping us less, I guess, surrounded by all this tech and all this stuff? And here we're saying this on the internet's number one tech network. I realize that. But it seems like it's just such a noise pattern we're in every day. We need some new technology to help us stay more grounded and away from so much tech, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, why are you people watching?
I think
so much
the
tech?
Problem. Sorry, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No. Just a quick quip there. Go ahead.
I think the problem is that it's taking the time to set those things up, because there are Gmail filters, and I know Google may want to put some automatic stuff in there, but who will it serve? Will it serve the recipient? Will it serve the deliverer? Will it serve, you know, the company? Google will serve Google. I think that we're seeing a lot of people trying to set up filters, and you know, there's Away Find and all these different notifications that people just go, whoa, stop. I don't have time to do that. I'm just going to write this stuff down. And I think the younger people, because they're so immersed in technology, we got to remind them that, hey, there's a pencil and a paper. There's a really cool thing I saw today, where a link where someone showed a cassette tape and a pencil, and it said, it's a shame that our children will never know the link between the two. So, you can't let them forget that stuff.
It's an interesting way to think about it, right? Yeah, because I immediately know what you're talking about, and winding back those tapes that get snagged. And a lot of people probably have no idea what I'm talking about right now and will never experience that. But is that such a bad thing? I mean, I don't know what all the quirks were with stone tablets and chisels either, but, you know, I don't miss them because I never knew them.
You could also go back in time and say, you know, hey, great ancestor, check out me turning this tape back with a pencil. And they would have no idea what you were doing either. So that was a bit of a window of time, but it's always been true. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I'm watching cartoons, Tom and Jerry stuff, and Jerry'd be squirting Tom with an old fountain pen with like the little lever on it that would squeeze all the ink out. I never actually saw one of those in my entire life. I still to this day don't know what that is, but it was still this thing, and it was a snapshot of a time, and I think we'll always kind of have that. For me, this prediction more, it hits home for me because I just feel like we need to have, I don't know, less noise. And we're all in bad cases for this because we all love the things that are making the noise and we want more of it and we can't wait to see the latest thing and talk about it and commentate on it. But in the end, there are days where you just need to push that to the side, grab a pen and paper, and just write something down. And I like, there's something about that simplicity I really like.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't necessarily use pen and paper more yet, but in the vein of this, I actually do make my to-do list in Simple Note. And the reason I do it in Simple Note is so I can access it from any device. So if I, forget my phone or my phone's in another room, I can still get it on an iPad. I can get it on a laptop. But I just make a simple list. I don't need a lot of features and checkboxes and all this other stuff. And we started using a different app for our grocery list because the thing with Simple Note is only I could access it on multiple devices. And now I can make a grocery list that either myself or my wife, Eileen, can access. But it's actually harder to use. It's not that much harder to use, but it's like, oh, you have to make a line, and then it puts it down. It's just not as simple as a straight old column of text. So I think I get what you're talking about, Mike.
Yeah, it's interesting. My wife is the same. We're using Flow right now, and the only reason we're using it is because we can email tasks back and forth, because I can't get her to any other task management option, because she's like, sorry, I don't go near the computer unless I have to.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix. At Netflix.com allows you to stream thousands of TV and episodes and movies directly to you. You know all about it. You don't need to deal with things breaking. You don't need to deal with having to remember where you put the disc or anything. You just stream it. Netflix.com/twit. You can watch it on your iPhone. You can watch it on your Android phone. You could watch it on your Xbox, your PS3, your Wii. If you don't have a game console, there's the Roku box, the Apple TV box. It's getting built into all kinds of televisions out there. There's so many ways to stream movies from Netflix, and they've got a great selection. They just announced today, or they didn't announce, but there's a rumor out there that they're getting more movie deals with DreamWorks in this case. So anyway, you're going to get a lot of different options in there as you go along. You're going to see a lot of different things. So check them out. If you haven't checked them out, Netflix.com/twit gives you a free 30-day trial. Or you know what? If you know somebody who might like this, pass along the link to them, Netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use that URL when they sign up, though, to get the free trial. And we thank Netflix for their support of Twit and, of course, Forecast. Let's move into the long-term.
I got a funny story to tell you real quick. Can I tell you this real fast?
No, go ahead.
So everybody knows all the Star Trek series except for Deep Space Nine ended up on Netflix streaming. That's
right. That was, within the last couple weeks, right?
Yeah, which is awesome. And we're watching all of Next Generation again with my kids. We're having a ball. But I'm watching an episode of Voyager. And then I watched an episode of Cheers because the entirety of Cheers is now on Netflix. And there's Captain Janeway in both. And it freaked me out completely.
She was on Cheers?
That's what Netflix can do for you.
That's actually pretty hilarious.
That's great.
Netflix.com/twit. Don't forget it. Let's move on to the long-term predictions. These are more of the in 100 years we'll be in flying cars sort of things. We'll stay with you, Mike. What do you got for us in your long-term crystal ball?
Well, we talked about gaming off the top of the show and how I didn't want to be Super Mike. But I think in 100 years we're going to have superheroes, vigilantes. They're going to be more commonplace. I think in terms of technology-based...
Real-life superheroes?
I think real-life superheroes. Now, I think they're going to be like the Batman, Green Arrow, Iron Man extreme variety. I mean, we're seeing guys in Seattle dressing up as vigilantes and sort of going in and trying to help out the common man, much to the chagrin of the local police force. And also, we've seen Dean Kamen coming up with, cybernetics for your arms and stuff like that, and the military come up with these suits. I think in 100 years we're going to have people starting to take the law a bit more into their own hands, and I think you could see superheroes, and if you have superheroes, I think you can have supervillains.
right, where do you vote for this? Because this is an awesome future. And I agree, there'll be skill-based heroes. Like, this comes up on the show sometimes. We talk about mutations and the future and all that. But I think that we will see a skill-based set of heroes first. If we see mutations later, fine, whatever. But for now, I want them to be sharpshooters and acrobatic guys and dudes what can move a car because he's real good at, you know, being strong and doesn't have to be Superman strong. Just got to be big enough to move that, you know, that little car across the street and freak out the people or whatever. But I love this idea. I love the idea that the news would be covering, like, these street fights between these, you know, villains and these other guys and the fact that we could kind of, I don't know, spectate. I'm sure this would be a way worse scenario than I'm making it sound, and way less glamorous and romantic, but I'd love this idea.
The liability insurance those guys would have to carry to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, I think they just won't need insurance.
Because they're vigilantes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what are you going to sue them and claim...
I could totally... I could see that happen.
Your Honor, he attacked me with his cybernetic arm.
Well, no, haven't you? This has been a plot in comic books and TV shows in the past where the superhero saves somebody, but then, you know, they kind of get their arms scuffed up, and then they're really ungrateful, and they sue the superhero for damages.
Yes.
The Incredibles.
Yeah, exactly. The Incredibles is a good example of that. So I don't know. I don't know if I buy the real-life superheroes just because of the legal aspect. And I don't mean the against-the-law aspect. I just mean the costly litigation that our society puts in front of everything. Let's move over to you, Colin.
Well, I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just a quick side is that, I mean, we had those riots in Vancouver.
Oh,
right.
The
Stanley Cup went down. In Toronto, we had the G8 summit. A lot of people weren't happy with the cops. Maybe it's just going to happen in Canada.
It's only real-life superheroes will be Canadian. Somehow, strangely, that makes more sense to me. Let's move on to the long-term prediction for you, Colin. Your longer view of the world, what do you got?
Well, mine actually kind of goes off what Mike was just saying. I saw this recently on an episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. There was a guest on who was talking about how genetic engineering is going to begin to cure what ails you, and that we are getting close to finding the genes for aging, and that we will be able to manipulate those genes, and that will certainly lead to finding other genes, finding strength and speed and agility and whatnot. And so not only is it likely we could see superhumans with super strength, but we could see superhumans with super strength who are 150 years old, but still have the body of, say, a 45-year-old.
Aging superheroes, in other words.
I wonder if it'll be, it's similar. There's a lot of comic stories that do this where there are too many. Like, most people have the powers, and then they talk about the, you know, what becomes of a place where everyone is special and it never turns out good in the comics. How do you see that going down? What happens when most people have this genetic augmentation and they are as strong or as stronger than the guy next to them, and they're all competing for who's the strongest?
I would think one big worry when it came to aging is that overpopulation would go through the roof. And then, so what do you do about that? Do you choose who lives and who dies through something like a lottery? Because if people are fighting aging and not dying, we're going to have a lot of people left on the planet.
That's Logan's Run right there.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's going to be superheroes who'll be voting whether they should be, you know, given an exemption to the 30-year-old rule or not, because they're doing such good public service.
Right.
Let them live a little longer.
When they're not in court.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's...
There's something I like about... it goes back to the Incredible story. That was the whole idea with that. I forgot the name of the bad guy in it. Oh, Syndrome. He wanted everybody to be special so that nobody could be special at that point. And there's something about a future where it's just a relative shift. Like, maybe at first it's crazy because certain people have powers, but eventually, if everybody's got them, it's just a shift from we're all this average strength, height, age, and everything else, to now we're all this greater thing, but we're just all still average. It's like if everybody took steroids, then it wouldn't just be baseball making us look bad or whatever. That's a bad example, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. There is a difference, though. I know what you're saying, which is, you know, as things improve, you find other things to complain about. So, you know, if everybody's got super strength, well, then it just seems normal, right? But then there is an improvement to having better sanitation and less misery. And even if everybody is along the same lines, at least you're not all miserable. You're not dying of the plague and you know losing limbs to leprosy and things like that. So I don't know. I mean, I'm totally with you where it's like, well, if everybody is as enhanced, then how is it really an enhancement? How is it not good for everyone? But I think there is a silver lining there.
But we have kind of seen that already. Just look, you know, in the age of antibiotics, everyone is enhanced. You know, 100 years ago, you know, what was the likelihood that you would survive till 5 years old or 6 years old before you died of polio or the flu or anything like that? So in a way, we're already seeing that because we have people who are immune to these viruses that 100 years ago could have wiped us all out.
All right, let's. That's pretty close to crazy ass predictions, but let's move on to the crazy ass predictions. Colin, we'll stick with you. One really far out there forecast. What do you got for us?
All right, I think that, you know, say 1,000, 2,000 years from now, the landscape of the world is going to be very different. You know, we're seeing a huge shift right now. People are starting to move out of suburbia, move back to cities, and you know, the question is, where is it going to go from there? Are we going to continue to build higher and tighter and go back to this city living style where no one really has a piece of land? Or might we go back the opposite way where suddenly people are vacating suburbia and we have lots of open space and not much to do with it? And we could see a future here that we're back to a very large farming country. Not that we have small farming going on in the country right now, but you know, we're either going to have a lot of land or we're going to have very little land.
Wait, so your prediction is that we'll either have a lot of land or very little land? Pick a side!
you see what I'm getting at, though?
Yeah, I do.
We're going to, have a very large shift in how we're housed and where we live
Which way do you think it'll go?
Right now it looks like it's going toward much denser. Mm-hmm. You know, historically it's always been dense because of just the inability to transport somewhere easily. And then we got the car and we moved out into suburbia, but that's only lasted about 50 years. And so now we're starting to get dense again. And, you know, we could start to see as these big sprawling suburbs get empty, they may need to build up to become even more dense to bring people back to them, and we could just wind up with a very dense landscape across the U.S.
Well, dense usually means or translates to urban sprawl, right? Like, it usually ends up just getting ugly. The crime sort of radiates in the center as everyone sort of moves away from it. It gets bigger and bigger.
Well, no, dense is when everybody moves back.
Crime problem. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
No, I was just saying dense is the opposite. Dense is when everyone moves back in and you don't have the sprawl anymore.
Oh, I see what you're saying, right. But I don't know. That's why I think it's cyclical. It's like if they're going to come in, you're going to move into the city again, and it's going to get really dense, and that means we're going to be living a lot closer to each other, and then pretty soon we're going to go, I hate this. I just need to get out of the country and get some fresh air. And then it goes out again, and then we get all this new city area that just becomes slums and crack houses and a dump.
But then the question is, in 1,000 years...
Can't sprawl happen first?
What do you mean sprawl happened first?
Basically, well, right now, you know, the cities are expanding out and out, you know, so we're seeing urban sprawl. But now what I'm thinking is that it just builds on top of that sprawl. So it goes sprawl, then density, sprawl, density.
Right, exactly.
So it just keeps expanding out.
And, you know, you compare dense living today is, you know, already 100 times better than dense living 100 years ago was. So extrapolate that out over 500 years, 600 years, 700 years, you know, what personal comforts and personal abilities will we have gained by time we're all living stacked on top of another once again, especially if the genetic stuff happens and we're all living to be 150, we're going to have to live somewhere.
Well, I think Mike made it clear earlier that we're going to get faster travel. Or was that you, Colin?
That was me.
That was you. I'm sorry. Okay, so you made it clear we're going to have faster travel, which means if we actually lower the population, which I think will happen eventually, we're headed towards peak population, and I think it will go down. Then if we have fast travel, less population, I think it will go to dilution. I think people will like to live in more space and more land. But I think there will also be dense cities that people will go into and use when they need to. We get more leisure time. We spend some time in the cities, but we live out in a more pastoral area. And the biggest problem with land right now is the amount of people that we need to allocate it to. But if population eventually does peak and then start to decline, it starts to be more land open.
But will population decline if we're all living stronger, living longer?
Oh, because we have all those freaking...
Right, we have all those genetic modifications.
Undying superheroes.
Cybernetic arms.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The population problem is a problem.
Well, if none of us die, it's going to be a huge problem.
Yeah.
We're all going to have to go into tanks. Take some time off. Like in Cory Doctorow books. All right, let's
love it.
Mike, move your crazy ass prediction. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap. What do you got for us?
Well, with the amount of knowledge that's available to us today, I can only imagine 1,000 years, 2,000 years from now, where people are living on top of each other or spread across. I think that the amount of things that people are going to be able to learn, I think we're going to have a lot more experts in single fields. So people are going to be basically focusing on one thing and doing it really, really, really well. And there's going to be experts in the most minute niche things across the globe so that they won't know how to do the broad spectrum of things necessarily, but they'll do that thing really, really well. So we'll have a whole network of incredible experts that are going to be spread across, well, or condensed, depending on if Colin's thing comes true. In various pockets throughout
the world. This, I think, is a little bit dependent on this idea that, let's say, jobs or projects or concepts or whatever get more complex. Because the more complex it becomes to do something, let's say we talked a couple weeks ago, I think, about how hard it is to fix a car now. Maybe it was last week. You can't just be Mr. Mechanic and have a little knowledge and pull the car up and let's take a look under the hood. There's so much going on now that you kind of need many specialists or people who are very specialized in dealing with a very specific make of car or whatever. It seems like the more complex things get, the more opportunity there is for niche smart people who are really good at the one thing. So with the future cards, one guy is really good at the voice chip, and there's somebody else who's really good at, I don't know, changing tires. That's a terrible example, but you know what I mean. I think that this is not only a good prediction, but I think a necessity as we move into a more technological age. We're going to have people who are better and better at the small bits of the bigger picture. And the bigger picture needs, it's just going to get more complex. So why not build more little cottage industries around the small stuff, I guess.
And the opportunity to develop this is just absolutely huge because we're already in an era where, if I wanted to start learning about, voice chips in cars, I can get that information like that. And so, the opportunity we already have to learn about everything we could possibly want to specialize in, one thing, pick something we really like and get down, that ability already exists. It's just that opportunity needs to be created as things get more complex, that's what'll happen.
Mike, do you think we'll be less reliant on certifications and education, traditional degrees, and more reliant on people demonstrating their expertise?
Absolutely. I think that, look at Wikipedia. People look at that and go, there it is. I think it's going to be a word of mouth. I think it's going to be trust. I think it's going to be reputation, And I think where you're going to see is the voice chips of the 2010 era. They'll have an expert just for that 10-year period. And then they'll have another expert who is able to take care of it, from the 2010 to 2020, So I think that it's going to get really, really specialized in all these fields. And I think it's going to be a lot of trust-based work that results out of it.
And it gets a lot more granular at that point. So even if you're the expert of that decade's worth of voice chips, and we'll just keep using that example, there may be subsystems or smaller pieces of it, or you're a guy who's just really good at finding them because they're kind of hard to get a hold of, and there's another guy who's really good at fixing them, and another guy who's good at painting them or whatever. And it seems like that's where the fun in the internet is. It's finding a thing to do on it that it wasn't written to do, and that's what Twit does today. It's what I do with podcasting. We're all figuring out ways to take this big complex thing and turning it into small specialized segments, and it's, I think that's, I mean, we're on that path already. We're heading there now.
All right. That wraps up the predictions. Let's move into four questions, Scott.
Four questions, Tom. Why? That's a time on the show where we ask our guests four questions. We ask them rapid fire style. That means they don't have a lot of time to think about it. They have to answer from the gut. And I'm going to start. Let's see. Who am I asking?
You're asking Mike.
It's like, Mike, I'm asking you your four questions. You all ready? All right, here we go. What childhood book would you like to see in a holodeck so you could enter it?
Cat in the Hat.
All right.
Without Mike Myers.
So oh, okay. the yeah, Good. The original Cat in the Hat.
Thank you for the clarification. In the future, when there are no more cows, what will we have to wait for to come home before something can end?
The wife.
Okay.
He does that so the wife
lady can still sing.
That just sounds weird.
Yeah. When we're all made of cheese, trademark Tom Merritt, what cheese do you hope you're made of?
Monterey Jack.
Ooh, nice choice.
That sounds good right now. And finally, if your car could have just another car thing. If your car could have just one more futuristic function right now, something we haven't seen in cars, what would it be?
The ability to pop popcorn.
I'm sure that would be easily modded.
I don't think that'd be hard at all.
No, you get one of those transformers that goes into the cigarette lighter and then just plug in an air popper.
The robot transformers or just an actual?
No, the other kind of transformer. Actually, you could just probably put the popcorn in the under the hood on a good hot day.
It's true. The foil thing. I think they cook eggs on those.
Yeah, right.
Might not taste too good after being under the hood, though.
Oh, it's a different kind.
It would catch a few flavors under there.
It's oily. Tastes like
olive oil. By the way, the great cheese fight in the chat room is something to behold here. About
I know
says
everybody
is the best cheese.
is announcing their favorite kind of cheese. All right, Colin, are you ready for four questions?
I'm ready.
You're sitting comfortably?
I am.
Good, then we'll begin. In space, will anyone make a decent bagel sandwich?
Absolutely not, because there is not a decent bagel outside of the tri-state area.
I know you're
entirely
convinced.
I had that answer before you even asked me the question.
Question number two. What kind of robots will give you the best miles per gallon in the future?
I think Yugo is going to make a big comeback
really?
With that. Absolutely.
Just kind of a heritage brand. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
We will see Yugoslavia come back, and their specialization will be robots.
Question number three. When will we get all the bugs worked out of the Twin Studio?
Absolutely never, Tom.
Sadly, that's probably true.
In fact, I need to go to the basement.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised you haven't left already in the middle of the show. And finally, question number four. Will aliens ever make good interns?
I think they'd be a little too lazy. They'd probably sleep a little too much, and they would probably be busy picking cows up in their spaceships.
Why do you think extraterrestrials will be lazy?
I feel like you travel all that way. There's not a lot to do in that starship, and you're going to develop a bit of lethargy during
Plus
that
our,
time.
Plus, our gravity is so much more. So,
right. You know, if they're on a planet with light gravity, they're going to be sagging down here.
All right. Well, that's it. Excellent work, you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for helping us. You know, we have had a little technical difficulties. You probably couldn't tell, but Scott and Mike both were having a little bit of an audio issue, and you were troopers. Thank you for sticking with it. Mike Vardy, let folks know what you're up to on the internet and where they can find you.
Well, you can find me at vardy.me, and I'm launching next week a new podcast called Productivarty, the podcast that deals with productivity with personality. And Tom, you're the first guest.
Thank you for having me on. I'm honored to be the first episode. So it's spelled like productive, but then V-A-R-D-Y at the end, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's a bit of a vanity project.
And Colin, obviously, you can be found running around behind the scenes
right here.
But what else you got going on?
I'm also on Twitter, Radio Colin on there. I post interesting things from time to time. I don't really have any side projects right now because this has eaten up all my time.
We keep you pretty busy,
yeah. I have not even done laundry since about two weeks ago moving into this studio.
Well, we really appreciate the hard work that you and Alex and John and Chad and everybody have been doing to get this stuff up. Russell, Brent, the list is almost endless. Lynn, Liz, Lisa, Scott, before I just start naming everyone that works here, what else is going on?
Well, I think today I'll just tell people to follow me on Twitter. There's a lot going on right now, and it's the best place to kind of find out what's going on. So they can go to twitter.com/extralife, or they can actually find me on Google Plus these days at, and listen to this, frogpants.com/plus.
What?
Pretty rad. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Nice. It's slash plus.
The word plus or the symbol plus?
It's nothing fancy.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We appreciate you tuning in for Forecast, our first forecast from the new Twit Studios. That's it for us. You can find us on the web, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
Way.
Woohoo.
Now I can hear Way. Twice.
Is there echo now?
Oh.
Yeah, there's still echo.
That's just wrong. There's Colin. He's looking good. How you doing, Colin?
Yeah.
Thanks for
Wow, he is really invisible.
So you were just being an enabler by giving him two.
Well, Leo put one clock, and then I was like, why not?
Ah.
If one clock's good, two clocks are better.
So if I click in one,
what?
Click in one,